From feature story news in Washington and our bureaus around the world, this is FSN Reports. I'm Simon Marks. Today, a special edition of our program, an extended interview with the actor and social media maven Stephen Fry. He has traveled the world confronting the global lawmakers who seek to outlaw homosexuality.
Gay people, most of them are lying about their problems because most of them would like to be favored and famous because they're victims of Russian medieval behavior.
A cultural icon in Britain, Stephen Fry talks about the extremes he encountered, making his BBC series Out There. That's coming up on FSN Reports after our latest summary of the day's headlines.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Rebecca Foster. The funeral of 18-year-old Michael Brown, who was shot dead by a police officer earlier in August, has been taking place in the U.S. city of Ferguson, Missouri. His death sparked several days of violent clashes in the area last week, but thousands of mourners at Friendly Temple Missionary Baptist Church have remained peaceful. U.S. correspondent Lorna Shattuck reports.
Singing, dancing, and clapping to gospel music, Michael Brown's funeral service began on an energetic note. Several family members shared their stories about the teenager with thousands of mourners who crammed into the church. Many of them had queued for 3 hours to be there. The teenager's father, Michael Brown Sr., said that his son had been a gentle soul, while cousin Eric Davis encouraged people to show any anger they felt at the ballot box, not with violence. Civil rights leaders Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton were among those in the congregation, along with 3 White House officials.
Ukraine's military has said it's fighting rebel armored vehicles that reportedly crossed into Ukrainian territory from Russia. This comes as Russian President Vladimir Putin and Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko prepare for a series of meetings in Minsk to discuss the ongoing crisis in eastern Ukraine. Here's Jake Rashbass from Moscow.
Ukraine's military announced that it stopped the column near the town of Novoazovsk as it was heading towards Mariupol, a city in the southeast of the country. One military commander said that the column suggests that pro-Russian rebels may be seeking to open a new front in the south of the country against forces from Kiev. When asked at a press conference in Moscow, Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said that he had not heard anything about the column and expressed doubts at the reports, referring to what he called regular disinformation about alleged Russian incursions.
The French Prime Minister Manuel Valls has submitted the resignation of the government following a row over the country's economy. Talks over the weekend saw French President François Hollande severely criticized for his handling of the economy by many of his top ministers. A new government is expected to be formed by Tuesday. Our correspondent Ollie Barrett is in France. He says the country's lack of economic competitiveness in the Eurozone is to blame.
François Hollande was under pressure to deal with what had started to look like a rebellion against the government's economic policies, with 2 important ministers calling for a change in recent days. François Hollande has now called for a new cabinet to be formed, consistent with the direction he has set for the country. François Hollande knew that la rentrée, the return of government, would be difficult given France's economic situation, but he would not have expected to be having to form a new government in his first full week back.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN. 2 people have been diagnosed with the highly contagious Ebola fever in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The disease has already killed at least 1,470 people in West Africa, where almost 2,700 people have been infected. In Liberia, a doctor who was given the promising but not yet approved ZMapp drug has died. Gary Alfonso reports.
The health minister of the Democratic Republic of Congo confirmed in Kinshasa that 2 people suffering from high fever had tested positive for Ebola. He confirmed it was the 7th outbreak of the disease in the DRC, where the virus was first identified in 1976, but he confirmed there was no link to the cases in West Africa. Authorities immediately quarantined the area affected in Equateur province, more than 1,200 kilometers northeast of the capital. Meanwhile, in West Africa, large parts of Guinea, Liberia, Liberia and Sierra Leone remain quarantined and cut off from the outside world as health and security officials battle the disease and people who defy attempts to isolate them.
And governments worldwide can now purchase systems which can track mobile phones anywhere in the world. The Washington Post reports not just government intelligence agencies are tracking the ubiquitous cell phone, but now companies have developed software to do similar things. Washington correspondent Priscilla Huff has the details.
Any tinpot dictator with enough money could buy the location tracking system and spy on people anywhere in the world. London-based activists told the Washington Post these commercial cell phone tracking systems are a huge problem. America's National Security Agency and its British government intelligence counterpart have long used the basics of cell phone technology to track people. In a test, one company's software was able to find a reporter within a city block of their actual location.
And that's the latest from Feature Story News. Rebecca Foster reporting.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Simon Marks. Welcome to FSN Reports. On today's program, an extended interview with the British actor Stephen Fry. He became well known to American audiences when he played the role of Prime Minister Alistair Davis in the latest series of the Kiefer Sutherland TV drama 24. In Britain, he's been a cultural icon for decades, a comedian, writer, activist, and on Twitter, a global celebrity with more than 7 million people following his social media messages daily. Jewish and gay, he is proud of his identity and recently hosted a series of television programmes for the BBC about the conditions facing the LGBT community worldwide. He travelled the world to challenge lawmakers introducing anti-gay legislation, like Vitaly Milonov, the Russian parliamentarian, behind laws that ban the promotion of homosexuality.
We would be quite unhappy in case some unadequate individual would invade kindergarten trying to explain to minors that they should identify their sexual identity.
They don't invade kindergartens and tell children to have their sexual identity. That is absolute nonsense. You're inventing a ridiculous enemy to get support so that ignorant people will imagine there is this terrible threat to children. The real threat to children is, as it always was, ignorance, lies. Because they will grow up to find out they've been lied to, and they won't thank you for it.
Stephen Fry on his BBC television programme Out There. He sat down recently to discuss the films with James O'Brien of Britain's LBC Radio.
I decided about 2.5 years ago and put it to some friends in the production business, as it were, that it was perhaps a good idea to look around the world, different emerging economies, especially the important big ones like Brazil and Russia and India, and see what the attitude towards homosexuality was. And I say was because it's such a fast-moving thing. And since we sort of locked and edited these two films we made on the subject, things have changed bizarrely. I went to St. Petersburg to confront the man responsible for a piece of legislation making it illegal to promote homosexuality to minors, whatever that means, and how you promote homosexuality, I've yet to discover. And in the time between interviewing him, which was in itself farcically hilarious, it has become now federal, whatever word they use, I think it is federal, law in all of Russia.
Was there a trigger that 2.5 years ago? Was it just a sort of thought bubble that ignited above your head? Or did you encounter something, read something that made you think, I want to do a bit more about this?
I think it was hearing about the prospect of it happening in St. Petersburg. And as it happens, I love Russia and I love things Russian. I sort of grew up adoring Russian literature and plays and music. And it just struck me as extraordinary that the city that gave birth to Diaghilev and Nureyev and Tchaikovsky, the greatest Russian artists, well, he didn't give birth to all of them, but certainly Tchaikovsky, should be doing this, should be suddenly allowing a piece of legislation, which on the surface, of course, seems perfectly measured It's just saying that you're not allowed to promote homosexuality as an equal or viable way of life to somebody under 18. But what it's actually doing is giving license, and this has been shown every day with increasing force and violence, giving license to brute squads of sort of shaven-headed neo-Nazis, endorsed by the Orthodox Church, which has hugely encouraged this. They're violently anti-homosexual as well, and I mean violently. They promote from the pulpit with violence, and that really is disturbing in a country as important as Russia. I mean, it's disturbing anyway.
Of course, and I mean, it happens in plenty of other countries as well, many of which you visit. You didn't have to go to Uganda, by the way, to find a radio phone-in that was occasionally populated by ranting homophobes. We could have made room for you here in Leicester Square on that occasion. But in a way, it's a sort of cart before the horse scenario, because the legislation follows from that strange impulse that some men, occasionally women, but usually men, this strange impulse they have to attack, what the film, you mentioned that it's very funny, and it is, but it's a grim humour, obsession with body parts. Yeah. And I would have thought a man of your intellect and proclivities would have spent a lot more time than most of us wondering over the years where that comes from, and yet you seem as befuddled and as dismayed by it as everybody else is.
I am basically mystified as to why someone should spend so much energy and anger, so much rage should be vented against other people's lives that don't impinge on their own. I mean, they rested on three utterly fallacious assumptions. One, that people choose to be gay, which is so manifestly untrue, and especially true in countries like Iran and Iraq and Russia, where the price of that choice is such violence and such hatred and such a life of suffering.
And death.
The other, that having made that choice, you then try and recruit others to be gay. Particularly the youth, you recruit, because you need to do that for some reason, which, I mean, that's just insane. I mean, it's just a black lie. It's like the blood libel against the Jews. It's just simply a lie. Gay people are not interested in other people being gay. There are enough gay people to go around, and we're all perfectly happy, thank you. And we don't need anybody else to. It's quite more common the other way. I often hear gays, straight women saying, oh, why are all the nice men gay? They would be the ones trying to recruit gay people into being straight. And in fact, all my life I've been recruited into being straight. That's to say, when I was a child, 100% of every film I watched, of every magazine, you know, all the Carry Ons and the James Bonds and everything like that, all my friends were going, oh, look at the bazonkas on her, and you know, everything was telling me to be straight.
So if sexuality was negotiable, no one would be gay in the modern world.
Nobody. We'd all be straight, because everything, especially from my generation, because there was absolutely nothing but, that's your life, that's what... Even if it's like you're watching a 30s weepy, you're watching, you know, Humphrey Bogart and Ingrid Bergman or whatever, and it's all about you know, love and marriage and
Rock Hudson and Elizabeth Taylor.
Yes, exactly, precisely. Even if it happened to be a bit of a lie, And then the third most pernicious one is that there's a sort of hint of paedophilia, that we must protect our children from these gay people because they want to interfere with them, which is just monstrous and grossly wrong. Gay people hate the paedophilia acts as much as straight people.
Well, of course they do. And it should go without saying, but for the reasons
consent
you detail.
Means consent. Precisely. You cannot have consensual sex with someone, you know, below a certain age.
But nothing has actually changed for millennia with those three things, has it? I mean, because presumably that was the origin of the religious homophobia, would be to try and grow the congregation through procreation.
Yes, so that's part of it. In fact, there was a Brazilian senator I spoke to visit to Brazil, which is a fascinatingly complex and ambiguous country, because on the one hand, it does have some of the best carnivals and parades. The São Paulo carnival is the biggest in the world. Their gay parade is 4 million people. Until you've seen 4 million people in the streets, you haven't seen it. Anything.
Unbelievable.
I mean, it's just simply incredible. You stood in the same spot and waited for them all to pass. Hours and hours and hours, you'd have to stand. And, of course, a lot of the people at the parade are straight. They're really dancing around, celebrating with their support and so on. But the darker side to it is I've had a bleak and miserable, terribly sad evening speaking to this wonderful woman who lost her 14-year-old son, who was devastatingly tortured and beaten to death by a gang in Rio. And there's a gay person commits suicide every 36 hours in Brazil. It's a pretty terrible statistic. And I spoke to this right-wing senator who was trying to roll back equality laws. And he used the argument about what's natural. And I said, well, I'm glad you raised that, because before I set out, I have friends who are zoologists, and we sort of agreed between us that maybe between 400 and 600 animal species have exhibited homosexual behaviour that's been noted by professional zoologists. But only one species on Earth has ever exhibited homophobic behaviour. That's mankind. And that made him very angry. He didn't like that at all. I don't know why we're talking about that. It's not relevant, you know.
Well, it's difficult intellectually as well, isn't it? Because, of course, that means you're the people you need to take the argument to are the people who are going to be least receptive of your findings. So who are you thinking of when you made the film, if anyone in particular? Because you preach beautifully to the converted, but presumably you're aiming to do.
And I was hoping that people would have enough curiosity, enough human curiosity, not necessarily even intellectual curiosity, because I don't think it's an intellectual matter. It's a question of human curiosity to see the life stories of the incredible bravery of young men and women living in cultures where they are trying to live out the identity that has been given to them by their nature with as much pride and dignity as they can, and support for their fellows in the face of governments that are likely to not allow them to meet together in public, not allow them to have health checks, not allow them, you know, any of the normal dignities of a citizen. To see that, also to try and penetrate the mystery of the extreme homophobia, and to register something in the world, which is not the most important thing in the world. I mean, it's special pleading on my case. There's misery and poverty and hunger and abuse and war and chemical warfare and so many dreadful things going on in the world. And I go where my own personal curiosity takes me, because I think the fact is, if I was to do a series about railway engines, yes, people would say, that's not a real passion of yours, Stephen. You can sort of tell.
It's transparent.
You might have read it up very well, and yes, you're talking to the camera and saying, you know, in this year, this particular mallard was built and it achieved these speeds.
There's people in front of you in the queue.
But there are many people in front of me in the queue for that. But this is something where I have some interest in it, both personal and through friends, and
of course,
and through, you know, through cultural and human curiosity. I've been very, very lucky. I mean, I'm in a profession where, you know, being gay is hardly a stunning surprise. There was, you know, just the odd occasion, FA Cup finals, when I've suddenly seen some skinhead shout at me, and I thought it was a joke at first, and then seen a fury in their faces. Yes. Fortunately, they've been far enough from me not to get to me. And I was present where the chairman of Millwall, with my club Norwich, I was at the director's box, and someone shouted a very, very obscene, both anti-Semitic and homophobic remark at me. And I was extremely impressed by the owner, who was American, who immediately just pointed and banned the guy from the ground for life. He said, we have zero tolerance. I know Millwall has a reputation, and we're changing all that. We have absolute zero tolerance of any of that kind of stuff.
So you've never been frightened then?
No, I haven't, I'm lucky to say. I mean, I live in the middle of London, and it always passes through you. I can imagine how women must feel when they walk alone at night, yes, sometimes. Because even, I'm sure you've had it yourself, you're walking alone at night on a London street, and you suddenly think, we all read of bizarre, absolutely meaningless, cruel, unnecessary, horrific attacks on people. You and I are men, so I don't look particularly gay, though, because I'm well-known, people might know I am, and I sometimes think, there's a cluster of young people, sure, over there with hoods, I think I'll probably go another way, you know? And then I think, what must it like to be a woman walking on your own? You know, and you hear footsteps behind you. Jeez, whiz, yes, you know? And so I try and do that very careful male thing, that if there is a woman ahead of me, I talk on the telephone or pretend to, or cross the street just to put them at ease, because I think just to let them know that I'm not a mad stalker.
Of course, you probably end up coming across even madder.
Exactly. Why is this man pretending to have a telephone conversation?
He looks like Stephen Fry as well. That's even weirder.
And why is he saying, yes, mother, this will be number four, mother?
No, of course. So, and you use the word lucky. You are lucky because you could quite conceivably.
That's the point. I'm not. You know, it's not a factory job or a shelf stacking job in some town where it's routine to speak about. Let alone the that's a bit gay, which is you know, I can. Personally, I'm not as affronted by that as some gay people are. You know, I find it quite funny. It's just, you know, well, that's a bit gay, isn't it? You know, I kind of think, I think it was a compliment of something.
Basically. Of course.
But the playground taunting, the, you know, the real serious bullying by Facebook or similar, that must be absolutely awful.
Can you really conceive of a world in which it won't happen?
I think, you know, progress is such a desperate business. You took two steps forward, one back, and sometimes two forward and then two back, back where you were. This year has seen the Queen signing into law the same-sex marriage bill, which is really extraordinary when you think about it. And yet, I remember in the 70s when I was a teenager, a lot of people voting against the equal pay for women. That came in under Ted Heath, and you think, what? Some of them will still be alive. What? They actually voted against women getting equal pay, now it's completely unquestioned.
Well, there were women who didn't like the suffragettes, weren't there?
They weren't far enough.
Well, why do you think they go in hand in hand? Because
women are not a minority after all.
Precisely. I'm exposed to these sort of thoughts a little bit more than you are professionally, because I've been a radio phone-in show, obviously. Quite. And it's
a filter for madness. We're very grateful to you.
Occasionally it can feel like that. And yet, quite often, the angriest people are not only angry with the gays, they're also angry with the blacks and the women. Why do you think those three? Because the explanation of almost being fearful of what might be your true self works with homosexuality. It doesn't work with
the other two. Sort of distorted and diseased version of the great British comedy stock character who is Rigby from Rising Damp, or who is Faulty, or who is Captain Mannering, or is Anthony Aloysius Hancock.
Yes.
That's to say that there's a dignity and a cravat, and they're somehow aping what they think a proper man would have in terms of a club and being able to tell the woman what to do and complete power over the natives. And they're living in a world where, in fact, they're treated as a shabby little nothing. And they think it's so wrong because I've got... And they sit in their room working themselves up into a fever of fury that somehow...
A farage of fury.
A farage of fury. And it's kind of quite bonkers because... On the one hand, they want to stick up for the old regime. On the other hand, what they most hate is someone like me, who is old regime. Yes. I can't help it. I did go to a public school in Cambridge.
You don't fit any of my presumptions or prejudices. How dare you challenge me?
I kind of do in a sense in that I'm, you know, my mother's Jewish, so they can say, oh, yeah, typical bloody Jew. They always hear. It's a mafia, the BBC, it's the Jews and the gays, and they all get together and they, you know, only give each other jobs and all that sort of stuff, you know. I saw in Uganda... I just happened to notice as well, it was such a side issue for our programme, but there was a Ugandan person who was talking about the Indians there, the Asians, and as you know, Idi Amin expelled a huge number of Asians from Uganda, who happened to have British passports, because it was the time when, you know, obviously, Uganda being a British protectorate, and so he thought he would show his power over Britain by expelling them all, and so they all arrived in Britain, and they became a whole generation, almost like the Windrush generation, as it were, of Afro-Caribbeans. And but there were some left who didn't go, and many of the most important companies, you know, your classic big carpet warehouses and things like that, are owned by Asians. And you will hear the Africans, some of the Africans, not all, of course, but the Bagandans, the Ankole people who make up most of Uganda, talking about them in the way that people spoke about Jews. You know, they only give jobs to their own people. They only do that. They only, you know, and they spend all their money on their businesses and education. So, well, yes,
damn them.
Cheating, isn't it? And that's what Jews do as well.
What do you feel when you encounter someone like the Ugandan pastor or probably my favourite moment in the first film is when you suggest to the man offering to cure young gay Americans, you tell him, you point out he's a little bit camp, and I don't know what trickery you used with the cameras, but the look on his face, I mean, he looks like Mr. Humphreys in Are You Being Served? That precise point in proceedings. It's so true. It's perfect.
He was so affronted. Funnily enough, California's had its revenge, but this particular man, well, I mean, not just this man, but his practice, which is called reparative therapy,
where
anxious parents whose son has come out to them or whose daughter's come out to them, often as young as 12, 10, 11, 12,
sure.
Send them to him. He calls himself a doctor and claims to be able to cure people from being gay. He's actually been outlawed now to use reparative therapy in California, which is where we filmed him, against or on a minor, which I think is right. I mean, even if one did believe that you could change someone's sexuality, to do it while it's still developing, I think, is extremely dangerous and peculiar. And apparently, I spoke to this guy who had been under this peculiar person's care, and he said, you know, all the other boys, you know, I met in the waiting room, and we kind of eyed each other up.
It was
a really good way of meeting boys.
don't you want to hurt men like
it? Well, some part of one is so angry, but in fact, you hope that history does in the end. Mm. I mean, it's a bit like, it's always too slow. I mean, if we have British blood in our veins, and I do from my father's side, obviously, we have ancestors not that long ago who stirred sugar into coffee, knowing that the sugar and the coffee had been picked and planted by slaves. And they weren't necessarily bad people, you know? They're not every Briton who used sugar.
Or had a child up there, Jim.
Yeah. It was just, you know, we learn, we progress. It's why it's called, you know, being a progressive. And I am more than a liberal, I'm a progressive. I believe in human progress. I believe we learn our morals. Morals is not an eternal truth. That's ethics. Morals is literally Latin for manners, mores. It's the way we behave now. And that changes and it improves now. And we try and, I think, the way we talk and talk about women or talk about people of other races and talk about people of different physical characteristics is better manners. I was talking about going to a party that Nicholas Clegg, the Deputy Prime Minister, hosted to celebrate the same-sex bill, and some very peculiar person said, congratulations, you have now ensured that the human race will no longer be able to propagate itself. And I don't know where you begin with such an argument. How does he think that gay people marrying will stop human beings propagating?
If he were to watch out there, do you think he might see a chink of light in the darkness of his perspective?
Just the tiniest
chink?
Well, some people's homophobia is so irrational. There was you can find it on YouTube. There's an American pastor who says, you know what I think we should do? We should fence off 100 acres of land, and we should force all the gay people into there, and they throw them food until they die out and there are no more gay people.
Yes.
And you wanted to put your hand up and say, excuse me, you do know where gay people come from, don't you? We all come from straight people. That's where we all come from.
So he was pitching a reality television show.
In this idea that gay people were a sort of self-serving cycle that reproduced. It's really weird.
And there are moments of that sort of, many moments of the humour, but leavened throughout by the tragedy in Out There. I've only seen the first hour, the first film. I look forward to seeing the second. And thank you so much, Stephen Fry, for your time.
James.
Thank you.
Stephen Fry talking to James O'Brien on Britain's LBC Radio. And the films he was talking about are called Out There, and you can find them out there in various corners of the internet. That's our special edition of FSN Reports. Let us know how we're doing. You can email us at reports@featurestory.com. We are also happy, like Stephen Fry, to chat with you on Twitter. We're there at Feature Story. I'm Simon Marks. For everyone with FSN everywhere, thanks for listening. From Washington, goodbye.